to you, Judge.
All right, that's fine. All right, Mr. Steele, I believe you're going to begin.
Hey, Your Honor. If I may have just a moment.
That's fine.
Wonderful weather change.
At least it's not 100.
This is true. Good morning. May it please the court. Again, my name is Alan Steele, and I'm here with Matthew McConaughey, the slightly less famous Matthew McConaughey, on behalf of John Dan Hogan. This is a search warrant case based on an appeal from a motion to suppress a search warrant based on an improper affidavit. And we have no qualms about agreeing that the trial court is due deference in a search warrant affidavit case. But deference does not mean rubber stamp it through. And that's where the state would like to take us, and I think that's where we're at. This search warrant in this case was so deficient that it never even bothered to mention, this is a DWI case, it never bothered to mention who was actually driving the vehicle. At no point does this search warrant affidavit state that John Dan Hogan operated a vehicle. And we have this argument of inference, because the case law states that a magistrate, the reviewing court, is allowed to make reasonable inferences. Reasonable inferences. If we allow them to go so far as to infer that a crime was actually committed, to infer the crucial elements even of probable cause, then we have eliminated the need for the Fourth Amendment in the first place. We've taken away this concept. The Fourth Amendment was put in place to protect, to get away from the general search warrant requirement. And we've allowed the magistrate to do what this court is being asked by the state to do, and that's to rubber stamp an affidavit into probable cause.
Well, he arrested him for driving while intoxicated. He arrested him for driving while intoxicated.
He states that he did ultimately make an arrest for operating vehicle while intoxicated, but he never says that he was the one operating the vehicle. That's like saying he could arrest 50 people for driving while intoxicated, but that doesn't establish probable cause. That just says, hey, I arrested him, and so you should believe everything I said. And Justice McCoy, that just doesn't get there. That is not what our Fourth Amendment and the Texas Constitution, which has different wording from the Fourth Amendment, which the Court of Criminal Appeals in Heitman held meant established additional protections. It's not what that was put in place to protect. And this particular type of warrant, I mean, we're talking about a blood draw warrant. That has to be, above all, one of the most sacred rights under the Fourth Amendment. We're talking about holding someone down and forcing a needle into their body. There can be nothing more sacred, more important under the Fourth Amendment than a concept such as this. Again, we have no problems agreeing that deference is due the trial court. But common sense is common sense to the reasonable, prudent man. Not to just simply guess our way to probable cause.
Well, it seems like the operation of the motor vehicle by John Hogan was alleged several times in the affidavit. The opening paragraph says that Hogan, John Dan, did then and there commit an offense relating to operating of a motor vehicle while intoxicated. And then he gives the details of it. In the closing paragraphs, he says that he believed that his actions were operating a motor vehicle while intoxicated and states his name. I can't see how much more specificity you're requiring.
Chief Justice, I'm not asking for a great deal of specificity here. I'm asking for a simple sentence. And in this case, it couldn't be I saw him operating the vehicle, because the affiant in this case, Officer Davis, clearly says he wasn't there. He got there after John Dan Hogan was removed from the vehicle. All I'm asking is for a simple sentence that says Officer Bentley or some officer saw him operating a vehicle. I don't think that's too much to ask. If we start inferring beyond that, we are on that the old law school slippery slope headed, you know, straight back to a general warrant, where the officers can just make an arrest and say, you know what, I think he was drunk and I expect you to agree with that. Now, I'll let Mr. McConaughey get further into the abbreviation argument, because I think that's key here. I think that's hugely important. But the fact is, just saying I arrested him for driving while intoxicated twice and then giving details in the middle that never say anybody saw him operating a vehicle, never saying I know for a fact this officer saw him, I heard this officer say he saw him operating a vehicle, and then the abbreviations make it all the more unclear. That just doesn't get there. That's not enough to establish that an offense was committed. And so with that, if the court has no further questions, I'll turn it over to Mr. McConaughey.
All right, Mr. McConaughey.
And I think we should recall that the reason, to use his words, he was held down and a needle forced into his arm was because?
He chose
not to give a breath sample. In fact, I believe the word in your brief was refused.
That's the standard. That's correct. He refused to give it. But, again, to get to that point, we have to get to whether or not there was probable cause to even ask. So, thank you.
All right, Mr. McConaughey, and we have you down for 8 minutes.
Yes, ma'am. May it please the court, counsel for the state. Chief Justice, I'd like to address your last question to Mr. Steele regarding the DWI allegations that are present in the arrest warrant affidavit. I'd like to clear that up some more. Our position is that, yes, those allegations are made in the affidavit. However, they are conclusory in nature, and they're not supported by any objective facts. What Mr. Steele related to this court, I would also like to buttress, is that the search warrant affidavit, while it makes those allegations that Mr. Hogan was operating a motor vehicle while intoxicated, does not say that any officer witnessed him driving that motor vehicle while intoxicated. As this court knows, the Fourth Amendment law, both on the federal level and the Article 1, Section 9 law on the state level, is well settled in this area. Issuing magistrates are entitled to make reasonable, common sense determinations when they review an arrest warrant or search warrant affidavit. And the key to that review is probability. However, they are constrained, as this court well knows, to the four corners of that affidavit, and they cannot bring in information into those four corners, nor can they read material information into the warrant that's not there. Reading material information into the warrant that's not there exceeds the scope of reasonable probability. The issuing magistrate cannot make unsupported inferences in reviewing the affidavit, and the affidavit must contain substantial inferences that the offense alleged was actually committed. With respect to our argument in the nutshell, we have two separate arguments regarding this search warrant. There's no affirmative link presented within the four corners of this search warrant alleging that the defendant actually committed an offense. There are certainly allegations, conclusory allegations, that he was driving a motor vehicle while intoxicated. However, they are unsubstantiated.
Well, it says he was on the scene at the time of the traffic stop.
Yes, Justice McCoy, it does.
So if he was on the scene at the time of the traffic stop, I think it would be obvious who was driving. Are we going to driving? Is that where you're going?
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
Or were you going to that he wasn't driving? Is that?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Well, if he's on the scene at the time of the traffic stop, he would be able to observe who was driving. And in the sentence before that, of course, as we know, it recounts he was driving recklessly. So I'm struggling with your argument. I'm not saying you're wrong. I'm just struggling.
Yes, sir. Let me help clear that up if I can for you. The Cadillac Escalade, which was alleged to have been driving recklessly downtown, was never identified within the affidavit as being the same Cadillac Escalade which Mr. Hogan was identified as having driven.
And that's not a reasonable inference?
No, sir. I don't believe so, Your Honor, because there are hundreds or thousands of Cadillac Escalades on the road in the Metroplex, and I don't think that the issuing magistrate could read that into the search warrant within the four corners, because I think that's a material fact that was omitted from the search warrant.
Well, don't you think that the affidavit kind of tracks the path of the vehicle through downtown pretty well, and then it stopped, and this officer that made the affidavit is on the scene at the time of the stop, and it's recounted that he had been driving reckless? I mean, I'm struggling here.
I understand, Your Honor. It does recount that a Cadillac Escalade was driving downtown in a very reckless manner. I don't disagree with the court at all. However, what the affidavit wholly fails to do is indicate that that Escalade was the same Escalade being driven by Mr. Hogan in this instance.
Okay.
With respect to our other argument regarding the abbreviations, our position is that these abbreviations, without further explanation in the search warrant, are not sufficient to establish probable cause for the issuance of the search warrant, and this is why. Issuing magistrates, as we all know, are required to review search warrants in a common sense manner. Our position is that the standardized field sobriety testing manual put out by the National Highway Transportation Safety Administration is not common knowledge of anyone other than those individuals that have been through the course. HGN, OLS, WAT all have specific meanings that are unique to that course that the officer testified in the suppression hearing. He did not know what those terms were until he took the course. I further point the court to the search warrant affidavit, which does not indicate that Officer Harris, the affiant in this case, ever took the standardized field sobriety course or ever had any experience in arresting DWI offenders. There's no such allegations in the search warrant. At no time did he take two or three sentences to explain the impact of a clue as it relates to a DWI investigation and as that relates to the standardized field sobriety tests.
But can't we assume, since he used the initials and the abbreviations and he was the one making the affidavit, that he knew what they meant? Isn't the question more whether the magistrate knew what they meant?
Your Honor, that's a good question. And our position is that we don't know, obviously, what the magistrate knew. And the magistrate's job under case law is to review it in a common sense, reasonable manner. And I looked up the definition of common from common sense, which means known to the community at large. And certainly I don't think anyone would disagree that the standardized field sobriety abbreviations or clue or how all those tie together with respect to a DWI investigation is known generally in the community.
But the community in general isn't issuing search warrant.
That's an absolute valid point, Your Honor. Our position, once again, is that lastly, to address your argument regarding the Escalade one last time, Justice McCoy, you'll note part of our abbreviation issue is that the Escalade was referred to as an IMP, I-M-P. Now, we learned through the suppression hearing that IMP is Fort Worth Police Department lingo. I see that I'm out of time. Would you like me to continue?
Just finish your sentence,
please.
Yeah, I'd like
to know what IMP is, too.
So. Yes, sir. IMP is Fort Worth Police Department lingo for impounded vehicle, which means the vehicle being driven by the person arrested, which was subsequently impounded into the police pound. And our position is there's no sentence in the affidavit that links the IMP to the Escalade or the Escalade to Mr. Hogan.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
Ms. Dehoney.
May it please the court, counsel. The standard of review, de novo review, is an important aspect of this hearing today for two different reasons. The first is that de novo review does not apply here. We have the gold standard under the Fourth Amendment, a search warrant. And contrary to what is stated in appellant's brief, de novo review of that search warrant affidavit is absolutely not appropriate. In fact, a case cited by appellant, a case well known to every criminal law student in law school, Illinois versus Gates, talks about the fact that de novo review is not appropriate when reviewing an affidavit. There is absolutely no doubt to the standard of review, federal or state, that applies in this situation. And the bottom line is that courts through the decades have asked officers to go and get warrants in situations, not try to seek ways to get around the warrant requirement. And so as that incentive, we look at those warrants that they obtain when they go the extra mile to get one, and we look at them through a deference to the magistrate. And that's what is applied here. Now, Gates is really clear. I also almost feel like I just need to say it. Since Heitman is discussed in the defense brief and was mentioned in argument, let's just put to bed that there is any difference between the way we review the Fourth Amendment in this situation and Article 1, Section 9 of the Texas Constitution. Of course, there are Heitman issues in Texas law, like the burden of proof on proving consent is higher, so there's more protection there. In this Fourth Amendment scenario, there is no difference. The two are looked at in lockstep. So let's just take that off the table, too. So the standard of review is not de novo, and there is not a difference between Texas and federal counterparts of the Fourth Amendment or Article 1, Section 9. So why would de novo be important here? In looking back at this case, the defendants are talking about IMP or ARR or different terms of knowledge that are known to this officer and clearly, because the magistrate signed the affidavit, known to her as well. They're also talking about whether or not this defendant drove his Escalade. By the way, Escalade is not mentioned in the affidavit. I wouldn't really know what an Escalade is. It says that the person operated a motor vehicle and then talks about, Judge McCoy, as you said, making all of those turns, going the wrong way, down different streets. And while I was born at night, I wasn't born last night, and neither was this officer nor this magistrate, because clearly it's set out in paragraph 1, the offense, operating a motor vehicle, and then the details are spelled out. And while it's not written like a Larry McMurtry novel, it's written in terms that police officers know. And so made me think of a case that I did not cite in my brief. It's U.S. v. Cortez. It's our United States Supreme Court, 101 Supreme Court 690. It's a 1981 case, longtime case. It says the totality of the circumstances is to be applied in scholarly fashion, but as understood, not in scholarly fashion, but as understood by those versed in law enforcement techniques. Okay, someone on the street does not know what these terms mean, but these officers do. But so why did I say de novo is important? It's important for another reason. In the 29 pages of the defense brief, they never tell you what de novo means. Now, you and I know de novo is a term, a Latin term, a dead language term for anew. In my brief, 21 pages, I never say what de novo is. We talk about terms that we understand, that we've been trained in, that we use day to day, and no one has to define de novo to you judges or to most practitioners. We know that it's an absence of deference, and we understand the standards under Guzman. But just as we understand that term and don't need to reinvent the wheel and define that, in our discussion here today or in our briefs, neither did the officer need to explain his terms and his field sobriety test terms. The magistrate here, had she not understood it, would not have signed it. And so if we apply the proper standard of review as we are required, we have to side with the fact that her signature on the dotted line shows she understood it. And assuming outside the four corners of that affidavit that she did not understand those terms turns the standard of review given us in Gates and from this court and from the Court of Criminal Appeals on its head. And so this affidavit, again, where officers did what they needed not do. Under Schmerber in the United States Supreme Court, they said officers on a misdemeanor DWI could go extract blood in what they described a minimally intrusive procedure without a warrant. The officer in this misdemeanor DWI went and got a warrant. So he was more protective. The warrant is protection for this defendant, not the opposite. And so in this situation, using the appropriate standard of review and the terms that we all know and that the officers all knew, this case should be affirmed. The Texas.
See what the affidavit says. It says officers said, without identifying an officer, just as counsel just told us. And if we're looking at the four corners of the affidavit, and it's defective in that part of the presentation that's made to the magistrate trying to determine probability, then aren't we just kind of letting slide that part of the requirement of who was operating the car being identified in the affidavit itself?
No, I don't think so. And the quanta for proof of probable cause and for what goes into the affidavit allows cumulative probable cause. The Court of Criminal Appeals, and I believe this court, has relied on cumulative probable cause. And in the same manner, what I would analogize to is if you're in a motion to suppress hearing, we don't require every witness to come in and testify. You guys are familiar, it's not in our briefs, but with the Granados case. It was a capital murder out of Williamson County, Court of Criminal Appeals decision. It has a couple of important legal issues, but one of them is that hearsay is admitted in a motion to suppress hearing. So that means the officer can say, my fellow officer told me with the facts, and not have that officer come in and explain what he saw.
But what my concern is that you don't say who the fellow officer is in this particular case. Just a general allegation that officers.
And bike patrol. While I'm going to say this is not the perfect affidavit, it is in no means a bad affidavit, and it's not even borderline. And in this situation, I believe the defense cited to Lefebvre, one of our commentators, and it talks about there's no rubber stamp, but if there was a marginal case, then that marginality goes, it's kind of like tie goes to the runner, it goes to the magistrate's decision here to sign the warrant. Even if you're going to assume that there's not a complete identification of who saw this driver driving his motor vehicle, making all of those wrong way turns, as you have the bike patrol officer discussed in the affidavit, and this officer pulling up after the stop was made by Officer Brannon. Even if you're going to assume that it doesn't perfectly spell each one out, Lefebvre tells us that this is still good because they got the warrant. Now, if we were looking at these facts as far as the officers testifying in a warrantless situation, that might be a different scenario. And still here, I think there's sufficient under a warrantless scenario.
We're going to put a plus down going after a warrant.
That's,
I agree with that.
That's what our Constitution says to do.
I'm past that.
Okay.
What I'm still struggling with is that what standard do we set
if we were dealing with someone who was a citizen informant, a term in some of my cases, Atkins, Salo, those cases from the 90s, Glover, all of those, Brother that went to the Court of Criminal Appeals, if we were dealing with someone who was calling in on a 911, we would not be required. Some of those cases have, some don't, the person identified. We would not be required to name that person who was a non-officer, citizen, good Samaritan is what I called it, informant. You don't have to have that Joe Smith made the 911 call to have that information feed into the totality of the circumstances. It's just not a requirement. That would be hyper-technical reading of an affidavit. In this situation, I'd say that there's inherent credibility because he's referring to other officers. And it's clear the way it's written that there was a first-person view of going the wrong way down at least two streets, making turns without the light being green, and then turning on Forest Park. You have to read the affidavit without blinders on it. And in the same way, in those cases I'm talking about, Brother, Salo, Atkins, all of those relied on information from other citizens who the officer didn't even know. Here the officer's relying on people he works with who are certified peace officers who saw this. There's a whole band of officers, according to the affidavit, chasing this person through the streets of downtown Fort Worth as he's recklessly evading. And by the very term of evading, that again is a term of art, something in our penal code, that means he's running away from officers. You don't evade citizens, so it's there. I'm not saying it's perfect, but it's there. And again, using their source, Lefebvre, tie goes to the magistrate.
What you're advocating is what we should do is as we review the standards for a bad affidavit and looking at the totality of the circumstances, we should give deference to the magistrate's belief by merely issuing the warrant that the affidavit is sufficient.
No, you're supposed to look at the affidavit according to the United States Supreme Court and see if there's sufficient information to warrant that a magistrate to have signed it. And in that situation, if that's what you see, then yes, there's deference in that.
And in terms of our standard of review and probability, how do you get to a probability if you don't have the name of officers who told Officer Harris that you've been driving this vehicle?
In a shorter route than you get to the probability if you don't have the name of a good Samaritan who calls in and reports information.
Well, that's a good analogy, but I don't think that's what we're looking at in this case. We're talking about a police officer who supposedly has taken some training and the understanding of the process of the filling out of the affidavit to get the warrant. And what standards are we going to set for that officer? And those officers that are to come in the future for the ones that prepare affidavits. If we say here, okay, we're going to slide by this bad affidavit and doesn't identify in the four corners, then aren't we saying that we would take one step backward away from proper identification?
I strongly disagree, and I would actually suggest that what you are espousing, Your Honor, is a grudging and negative attitude by reviewing courts toward warrants. And in Ventresca, which is V-E-N-T-R-E-S-C-A, that's an old United States Supreme Court case too, says that's inconsistent with the Fourth Amendment's strong preference for searches conducted pursuant to warrants.
I disagree with your characterization. So,
I'm just discussing what the United States Supreme Court has said.
I heard what you said, and I understand you were directing that at me, and I thought it was inappropriate.
Excuse me if you thought that. That was not intended. I'd like to support the Supreme Court's rulings whenever they support my case. I agree with your may I finish my sentence, Your Honor?
Yes.
I agree with your review earlier of the facts that you're having a hard time understanding where the holes are here. There was one statement at the beginning that said this is the offense committed, which was conclusory. If we were just looking at that statement, it would be a conclusory affidavit. But the details followed in several paragraphs. That's what we have here. It's not the King's English, but it certainly was sufficient under Texas and federal case law.
Thank you, Ms.
Thank you.
All right, Mr. Steele, I believe you're doing rebuttal. You'll have 5 minutes.
Thank you, Your Honor. And once again, may it please the court. Briefly, I think it's important what the state has just told us, and that is that the officer said John Hogan operated a vehicle, but he never actually said he operated an Escalade. And the majority of the affidavit talks about someone operating an Escalade. So by the state's own assertions, we have two separate things that can't really be reconciled together. She says this is reasonable inference, that we have to make reasonable inferences. Well, I want to be clear that I think what we're asked to do here is make assumptions. And they're asking this court to make several assumptions, including that this was the vehicle John Dan Hogan was operating was actually a Cadillac Escalade, that it's the same Escalade. They're asking you to assume that there were no others in the vehicle, asking you to assume that he operated a vehicle on a public street, asking you to assume that the issuing magistrate knew what the abbreviations meant, or that the magistrate had specialized training both with the Fort Worth Police report system and with standardized field sobriety testing, which is not taught in any law school that I'm aware of. I certainly didn't get that. I would have liked to have that training in law school, but didn't get it. That's training that comes from the police department. They're asking you to assume that the magistrate read this warrant, knew exactly what was going on, and issued it. There comes a point when we're just assuming ourselves into probable cause and we're not really following what the Supreme Court has told us we need to. Justice Meyer, I think you had an excellent point. It's not grudging to review a warrant, and I don't know why we feel the need to argue that it is. Again, it's not a rubber stamp, and that's what advocating that just reviewing a warrant at all seems to be. I mean, that's what I was hearing, is that by looking this over and not saying, okay, you absolutely have to be right, that we're somehow taking a begrudging view towards search warrant affidavits, and that's not what we're doing at all. There's a way that they teach, and Mr. McConaughey can tell you this better, in the police academy about writing search warrants, and one of the things they tell you to do is, there's an old saying from old police officers, saw drunk, arrested sane. And they tell them in the academy, don't do this. This is not probable cause. You're not showing anything. But that's what the search warrant is. That's what the affidavit is in this case, and that's what they're asking you to buy into. Briefly, in Brenniger versus U.S., the United States Supreme Court specifically said that probable cause deals with probabilities and practical considerations. And they said that these are considerations on which the everyday reasonable prudent man would act, not a legal technician. But what we just heard is you have to treat this as if a legal technician, not just a legal technician, but specifically a legal technician with training in standardized field sobriety testing in the NHTSA manual and in the Fort Worth Police Department system knew about would have acted. And that's not the standard. And I would point the court briefly, and this is not in the brief, to the Taylor versus State case out of the Amarillo court from 2001. It's Taylor versus State, 54 Southwest 3rd, 21, where the court applying the same standard of deference to a search warrant affidavit in a child pornography case found that that warrant failed to give us the necessary information needed to issue a search warrant to have probable cause. And the court notes that it's not just notable what the search warrant, the affidavit, and the attachments present. And again, here we have no attachments, nothing that says Judge Nelms went through field sobriety testing, nothing that says she has this knowledge. But in that court, they said it's not just notable what they have, it's what's missing. Six factors missing from that search warrant made it invalid. We have more than that here. We don't know what clues are. We don't know what this other language is. The state points to LOL and BTW and these common abbreviations that, honestly, if you go Google them, you'll find them in the Urban Dictionary, you can find them in the Webster's Dictionary. They're common usage terms. They don't relate the same. I did a Google search on HGN, and OLS and all that. And I came up with a bunch of companies that I've never heard of and nothing about this. These aren't common terms that everybody knows. I didn't come out of law school knowing them. I knew them from working with Mr. McConaughey at the police department. I knew them from going through field sobriety testing, training. But there's no indication that this judge ever had any of that. And so we're asked to assume our way into probable cause, and it just doesn't get there. And so we would respectfully request the court to find that this search warrant, even providing the deferential standard, was deficient. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Steele, Mr. McConaughey, Ms. Dahoney. We appreciate your arguments today. The case is submitted, and you all are excused.